Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. Joining us for the discussion, Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain, also joining us, University at Albany Journalism Professor and Professor, there we go, and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo, and WAMC's Ray Graff has stuck around as well. Good morning, all, and welcome. How are you?
Happy Election Day.
Yes, happy Election Day. You know, we'll get to Election Day in just a second. I have to say, last night, you know, while we're preparing the stories, I didn't know. I started to watch CNN and the shooting in Paramus, and you don't know how those things are going to escalate. Obviously, at that point, we didn't know what the severity was and so forth. And this is just hours after the lockdown in Connecticut, and then, of course, just 2 days after, 3 days after the
LAX.
The LAX shooting. And it was, I found the coverage fascinating. This is becoming the nightly news. It just seems that it's.
Yeah, it almost.
It permeates. I mean, it's almost every day.
And it's, you know, when I think the LAX thing happened, you know, we were talking at work about how it's almost has a routine to it. You know, there'll be a lockdown and then we'll sort of get the details. They'll filter out and, you know, this and that. And I guess when you've had such a tragedy in the last 12 months, like in Newtown, Connecticut, everything is just, you're numbed by it. And then everything else is just one more.
Newtown and Boston and it's stunning.
I think it's worse than numbed. I believe it is now, for a portion of our country, become entertainment. And I think that is just emblematic of a sickened society. In other words, they tune in for the excitement of it, not thinking that it is in fact real. It is a show.
Hunger Games.
Yeah, wars, same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think other people tune it out and they just sort of, another one of those shootings, you know.
Well, the media took a lot of criticism for a long time leading up to Newtown not covering these things, not making a big deal about them. We do the occasional one, Aurora, Newtown, and not the day-to-day coverage that we're seeing now. This has nothing to do, I would just like to say, with news coverage. It does have to do with societal issues.
Yeah. So, well, okay. I'm not sure.
Well,
I agree
one
with
feeds
that.
The other.
Right? I mean, we certainly, when it comes to news coverage, the let's take CNN for an example. All of the cable news networks were obviously all over this last night. And they're feeding that machine, which is a 24-hour news cycle.
A very hungry machine.
And so you have Anderson Cooper, who I watched for almost 3 hours last night.
Whoa.
And there were... I survived.
Wow.
I survived.
Amazing. You look okay.
I'm all right. But what struck me is, you know, we're going by the kid who's working in Foot Locker who heard 6 shots, and then the other woman who worked in the food court who heard 4 shots, and then the person who said that there were 3 people killed, and then the other person who said that they saw them running down. You know, and you're getting all of these reports, and they were very quick to say, these are eyewitness accounts, this is breaking before us, we don't know. And then you just wonder, what's the right thing to do in that case? Do you wait until you know, or do you give that information out? I don't know.
Well, it used to be, in the olden days, not too long ago, where you would get all your details and then you would come with a factual report of what really happened. And what really happened in New Jersey is that a lone gunman took his own life and nobody else was injured. But that was not clear, and rumors became the reports. Basically, when you don't have any hard information, I mean, you know, with all due respect, the authorities were pretty busy, you know, kind of locking down the mall and making sure people were out of it, you know.
But they figured 2,000 people were leaving that mall at that time. I mean, it wasn't like it was
a couple of
quote
people.
Unquote,
yeah.
You know.
But you guys are print journalists, and you have, I mean, internet has changed the equation.
It has.
For
it completely changed it.
But back in the day, you had time to get all these facts.
Right. And even, yes. But today, you know, we want to move something to the web right away. We, you know, there's a car crash. We say there's a car crash tying up the Northway. 5 minutes later, 10 minutes later, we'll say two cars were involved, one person was injured, you know, and you come back a little while later and you say whatever else you can find out, you know, that the traffic is backed up for 3 miles and one person was airlifted to the hospital, and then et cetera, et cetera. You just keep telling. Now the next story is that, you know, traffic is clear. I mean, we're all in the business of feeding a very hungry beast, a 24-hour news cycle. People are looking all the time. They're looking on their phones. They're looking while they're working. They're getting alerts. And we've become stimulated by that, and there's not a lot of...
I know. I think we're talking about two different things. Mm-hmm. One is how to cover a story. Mm-hmm. And, there's no question that we old-timers are definitely like the old way, where people didn't see how the sausage was made. We did all mm-hmm. the yeah. vetting and checking okay. ahead of time. I wish we could go back to that. We're not going to. Now people see us working, and they, as you say, I do think they become part of it. But the other question that I thought we were hitting on was whether coverage encourages more people to do this versus right. not covering it at all. And I just don't buy that. I will go back to suicide, which the media did not cover. All the experts said it's bad. It'll encourage copycatters. And meanwhile, without covering it all, suicide of young people became the most outstanding, you know,
really
cause of death. So are we seeing more shootings now because CNN is there all the time? I just can't buy it.
No, I don't think that. I don't think that was my initial point. My initial point is, maybe there aren't any more than used to be. Mm-hmm. But I think that the constant coverage, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I think you have to cover the news that is the news.
Right.
But I think that society now is at a point where people turn it on and say, oh, look at this. It's a high-speed chase. Oh, my gosh. This guy's going to crash.
News as entertainment.
Exactly. And horrific, horrible news often becomes entertainment because we have become desensitized as a society to its bread and circuses now. It is right. to the point where this is just not titillation, but excitement and something that is not real because we're watching it.
And I would counter that in agreement. I would counter that with saying back to what the point I was trying to make before, which is that it seems that in the coverage we have adopted almost a reality show presentation
yes.
of how we cover these events, that we want to have these people on and this is the clerk in the store who heard the shots and that is what is unfolding, instead of actually getting the information and say, you know, this is what we can confirm, this is what we can't. I would feel much better, you know, we have there's a lot of graphics, there's a lot of different things that they could do. I would love that if at any moment they would just put up and say, this is what we absolutely know, this is what the sheriffs are saying, this is what the FBI is saying, this is what the local authorities are saying, and this is what we have heard in some of our eyewitness reports.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily irresponsible when there's conflicting reports to say a clerk said this.
Yeah.
You know, a person running through the mall who just came out the exit gave us this report, but the authorities aren't saying anything or there's no confirmation of that. You know, I mean, it just lets people, like you said, you know, it lets people see the sausage being made. It is a chaotic time when something like this is happening, and maybe, you know, there's an adrenal aspect to it for people watching it. It certainly is for the people reporting it.
When you look at the rating spikes, I mean, I think it speaks for itself.
Are there rating spikes? I mean, mostly I hear from people saying, oh, did you have to show the towers falling down again? Oh, did you have to go over and over that? And
but when something is actually happening, people tune in. Mm. You know what I mean?
I mean, I agree with Ray. I mean, when I saw on my phone yesterday that there was a lockdown in Connecticut, I wanted to see.
Yeah, but we're different. We're all news people. So, I mean, I love breaking news, but I'm not sure that we're similar.
I think that's
similar.
Been transferred, though. I think that there's a broader segment now that is also, you know, kind of stimulated by it and watching for those alerts and kind of watching the headlines and watching the trailer on the bottom of the screen when they're watching something else.
I think they're switching to Big Bang Theory myself.
That's a pretty good show.
When we come back, we're going to talk about Election Day and all of the races that are going on and what we'll be watching over the next 24, hopefully just 24 hours. Hopefully then it'll be over in 24 hours. We won't have to
wait. Goodness.
48, 72 yeah. or...
Supreme Court next session. That's
right. We'll continue our conversation after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Sunflower Natural Food Market, Woodstock, accepting pre-orders for humanely raised organic and natural holiday turkeys, vegan tofurkey also available, on Facebook, Twitter, and sunflowernatural.com. Edward Garbasek, Certified Financial Planner, Havokin Wealth Strategies, Wilbraham, Massachusetts, providing customized financial retirement strategies for those approaching or in retirement. HavokinWealthStrategies.com. Empire State Youth Orchestra, performing Britain's Young Person's Guide to the Orchestra and Shostakovich's Symphony No. 5, this Saturday at 7:30 p.m. at Troy Savings Bank Music Hall, esyo.org. And Clear Yoga in Rhinebeck, Iyengar Yoga for all ages and abilities, classes daily, including restorative meditation and weekend workshops, a yoga practice helping to develop strength, flexibility, and peace of mind. ClearYogaRhinebeck.com.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, and Ray Graff are our panelists this morning, and we always welcome you to join us here at the roundtable. Roundtable at wamc.org. That is the email address. We don't have room for you to actually come in to the roundtable.
No.
But if we did, we'd certainly have a seat.
I mean,
for
it's not even a roundtable. Let's be honest. It's some circular. Kidney shape. I don't know.
It's rounded.
Yeah.
Rounded.
It was designed by ancient astronauts, I believe.
You can always join us, as I mentioned, roundtable at wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or by tweeting us at WAMC Roundtable. It is Election Day, and so let us go around and talk to our esteemed panel about the races that you'll be watching closely, because obviously we have the local races and then we have the national races, which are gaining attention, most notably in Virginia. But so let's go local.
Well,
first, Mike.
I think the biggest one that people are watching in New York State is casino gambling.
Right.
Prop 1.
Prop 1. By the way, if you're voting on a paper ballot, be sure to flip it over. It's on the other side. Don't think that. And you wonder what that impact will have and what the analysts will say.
It's funny. We had Blair Horner on. He did a commentary yesterday about all the propositions. And he said, remember, they're all on the other side, so flip over the page.
Flip it over, right.
So that's good advice.
They were talking about polling places this morning where the first thing they would say, here's your ballot. Now, don't remember, there's two sides. You know, that is part of the instructions when you walk in and they give you the folder and you go into the machine. So hopefully
Mom told me she got a call from Andy asking her to vote.
Oh, I got one too. I wasn't home to receive it, so it was on my voicemail.
Oh, good. He left you a message.
Yes, he left me a message.
That's very nice of him.
Yes. Robocalls by the governor supporting this proposition, which will allow 3 upstate casinos, eventually up to 7 casinos. And it's getting a lot of push. And how do you see it playing out?
Hard to say. I mean, New York City is... You know, you'd think on the face of it, New York City would be against it, but apparently the polling shows New York City majority in favor. However, people going to the poll, it could be very low turnout in New York.
In New York City, though, it won't be because they've got the mayor already.
Yeah, but
it's a done deal. You're right,
65% or whatever.
Yeah, so how many people are going to be voting?
That's my question.
100, 200?
I think upstate people will vote and probably in favor.
In favor. You know, the New York Times has been doing these stories about the Catskills, you know, and kind of playing it from that perspective, because that's their primary audience. It'd be a couple hours from New York City. And they're talking about, you know, sort of resurrecting the Nevelys and, you know, then the Grossingers and the different old resorts and the Borch Belt, you know, and they see it as just one way to do it. They want to put spas and golf courses back in and, you know, and have all these famous things. And, you know, you can understand it from that perspective. Other parts of the state probably wouldn't benefit as much. And then in our own Saratoga Springs, you kind of get a sense from the at least to the two women running for mayor, that they're not particularly crazy about casino gambling. But if it does pass, it better be that they get a casino in Saratoga Springs, because otherwise the money will flow out of the city. They have the Racino, which is, you know, video lottery terminals. And incidentally, some of the Racinos in Western New York are being told they can't call themselves casinos anymore. Yeah. They have to call themselves racinos, you know, because that's not the same thing. And, you know, and even the state, you know, wagering board is saying that if measure fails, they're going to immediately license more racinos. So it's going to have a big impact on the quality of life.
One question I had was, if this fails, is there a legal constraint that says that they can't put it before voters again? In other words, it's already been passed by two legislatures.
You know, this came up a little bit when there was criticisms and there was a lawsuit about the language. Some people, I think, reasonably say that it is very favorable language. It says, you know, to help keep property taxes down and aid education and all that.
It's a fairly long, flowery. Do you want to make life better for you and your children?
Polka dots and moonbeams.
Right. Well, anyway, in that court case, that issue came up, and they could put it up next
year
if a judge had shot it down. And I don't.
But not if it fails.
But I don't believe there's any restriction of them bringing it up again.
So once the legislatures say okay, then it could come back again and again.
Well,
that's
no,
my
not
question.
Again and again, but
that's
maybe again. I think they get two bites at the. You know, they may get two bites at it, but it then would, if it didn't pass, would have to pass successive legislatures
again,
and that would knock it out a few years.
Right.
How much of this do you think is geographic, in the sense of if we knew definitively where the casinos were going to be, would we be talking about something different if that plan were more concrete?
I think it'll be a mistake to do that, because there is that, we talked about it last week on the show, there is that not in my backyard mentality.
Right.
A lot of people, for instance, those in New York City who are polled, saying, hey, we're in favor of it, but just, you know, not in the five boroughs.
Right, just don't put it in
here.
Yeah,
so maybe it doesn't fly if you put concrete places already before the vote.
And there's other things on the ballot, and you wonder if people are even aware of what most of them are. I mean, in local towns, I mean, this is the off year election, as they say, where there's no statewide individuals, you know, attorney
right.
general or governor or anything like that, or a U.S. senator being elected, no congressman being elected. But pretty much most municipalities are choosing council members, board members, mayors, supervisors. And, you know, these are the people, and judges, family court judges, Supreme Court judges, local judges. And these are the people that really affect the quality of life and are going to make decisions that really, you know, affect you.
Those are the races. I mean, that's what got me up this morning to vote.
Yeah.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
because I, you know, those, we have a couple good races that I wanted to vote for.
But I mean,
yeah,
the retirement age for
typical
judges, that's potentially a hot button, right? And also the mine up in the Adirondacks.
Yeah, that some people are you know, at odds about that. You know, it would allow a company to continue to mine wollastonite, I guess, is an alternative mineral that is much safer than asbestos. And they would take 200 acres from the Adirondack Park, and it requires a constitutional amendment. But they would return those to the state.
They return 1,500. So it's
well, they
200
would give
15, for 1,500.
Right. They would give 1,500 right away, and then they would return these after their mine.
After they raped and pillaged it.
But
that's what the opponent
said.
Right. And the other side of it is that, you know, the legislature and the state passed this constitutional amendment, Forever Wild in the Adirondacks, this is really, a adulteration of that, and it shouldn't happen. So
don't they also, the mine will return the land, but don't they also do a swap? They give
1,500
acres.
Yeah, in exchange for 200 acres, and they will give back the 200. They'll have cleared a lot of it, and they'll have planted it, and, you know, right. And that's maybe the most controversial. Then there's something that helps civil service credits for veterans, which who could be against that? And then there's one that lets municipalities continue to be able to raise their debt limit or go above their debt limit to clean up sewage and storm sewers and sanitary sewers that flow into rivers. I mean, who could be against clean water? You know, and then there's another one for the Adirondacks that settles these land claims. Everybody wants to settle them, but there's some parts of the Adirondacks where people don't get clear title to their property because of the way the law was put into effect 100 years ago, and this will clear all that up and let them, you know, clear. Nobody seems against those. The judges is interesting.
Yes,
let judges go as late as age 80 if they are to continue their their term on Supreme Court and the Court of Appeals, state's top court. It's funny, some people are not crazy about it, but it just seems like it's ageism. My
mother, who has already pissed at me, annoyed at me for giving out her age, is above the age, and she says, no, it's not a good idea. You need fresh blood in there. So
the flip side of that, though, is that jurists are perhaps their smartest and wisest as they enter into their
system. Well, other part of that is the fulfillment of their terms.
Right, and they were elected for terms or appointed for terms for the Court of Appeals. And
they want to serve them out.
Yeah. We're going to take a break. We're going to hear the latest from NPR News, and then we will be back. We always welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We will continue our conversation on our roundtable panel after news from NPR. Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue, along with Mike Spain from the Albany Times Union, Rosemary Armeo, SUNY Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter, and of course WAMC's own Ray Graff. And we are talking about a myriad of issues this morning, and we have, right before the break, we started talking about Election Day. It is Election Day. Let's talk a little bit about national races, and I guess the big one seems to be in Virginia, right? I mean, that where all many eyes are on Virginia.
I'm going to ask about that because I've been reading a lot about it and knew we would talk about it today. I don't get it. Why is this such a big race? Virginia switches Democrat to Republican all the
purple.
Time. Why is this? Purple. This is supposed to be the big test of Obamacare and
Tea Party, I think, Ken Cuccinelli, the Republican, the Attorney General in Virginia, is right. It's already pre-interpreted as a measure of whether the Tea Party is on the rise or on the wane.
What are the polls showing now?
McAuliffe is ahead.
McAuliffe is strong ahead, but he had the president campaigning over the weekend for him, so that could have hurt him.
A cynic would say that the that it's already a done deal, not a done deal, but McAuliffe will win because Biden and Obama would not have gone and expended political capital if they thought he was going to lose. And a further cynical person would say the press wouldn't already be conjecturing that it's a Tea Party test if, in fact, the Tea Party had a shot of winning. So McAuliffe wins, obviously.
Well, I don't know if it's – I don't know that it's obvious, number one.
A cynic would say that. A cynic would say by tomorrow morning – this will the done deal would have done. I'm not saying I'm cynical.
A cynic who hasn't taken his meds, yes, would say
somebody
that.
Somebody might say that.
And New Jersey is also being brought up.
With Chris Christie, right. Of course. Let us not forget also about...
This seems like the political forecasting is off. Chris Christie is a personality. I don't think his election or re-election has anything to do with national trends. And Virginia also makes me nervous, too. It's a very unusual state. It switches. It doesn't normally... The gubernatorial race has gone back and forth.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not a strong Tea Party state. I think this is simplified.
Well, let's, of course.
That's what we do. But
oversimplified.
Let's talk about, so I'll add a facet here, which is when you have Terry McAuliffe, who was the head of the Democratic Party for so long and has this huge Democratic label all over him, does that not only we were talking about Biden and Vice President Biden but Bill Clinton was
very
has
close
been
friend.
On the yeah. and Hillary Clinton have been on the campaign trail with him almost constantly over the past several weeks. So it's certainly no loss of big guns and also the proximity to Washington, D.C., let's face it.
Well, the suburbs around Washington, D.C., are heavily Democratic, I guess, and the rest of the state probably is more, purple or even red in some places.
Right.
But I kind of agree with you, Ray, that, you know, already the analysis is there. You know, the polls are showing McAuliffe is going to win, and people are going to portray it simply as, I guess this is a defeat for the Tea Party.
Right.
This is a measure of, you know, Ted Cruz's, you know, attempt to stop Obamacare, and it failed. You know, and I don't know that it's that at all, you know.
And it might be the shutdown, too. This is also an area
backlash.
Of the country heavily affected by the shutdown, too. So
That's true. I mean, they were actually, you know, people lost their jobs in Virginia, and there might in Northern Virginia around Washington, D.C., a lot of people went without work during the shutdown. And then New Jersey, the reason I brought that up is that is being regarded as a demonstration that if you're a Republican, you can be against abortion, you can be conservative, but you don't have to be like a Tea Party type, because certainly the Tea Party does not like Chris Christie, the governor of New Jersey, and yet he seems to be extremely popular in a very Democratic state, and he's, you know, the polls are showing him way ahead.
Mm-hmm. When you think of, and this gets back to what we were talking last, but you know that this is going to be, you know, tonight and tomorrow, that this is going to be the forecasting and the...
Yes.
And tea leaf reading.
Yeah. Right. Literal and figurative, yes. And it's just... and you wonder how to stop that, or I guess it can't be stopped, but to read more into it than there is other
you
than
you turn
we have.
On the Big Bang Theory.
Yeah. You're right. I mean, you have to fill time. I mean, this is what they're paid to do.
The cure to all is...
The USA Network is running a continual, you know, Modern Family episodes, too. So.
Oh.
That'll serve as well.
I thought you were going to say, like, the West Wing, at least be sort of appropriate
political.
For Election Day, but no, all right. I'll go with Modern Family. That's a good show. Okay, so we have a few minutes before we go to our next break, so let's talk quickly about an item that we touched on yesterday, and that is the gay rights bill that was up for a vote yesterday. It did pass, and it's a White House-backed bill to ban workplace discrimination against gays, narrowly cleared a Republican procedural roadblock in the Senate on Monday with the support of a handful of Republicans just hours after the party's top lawmaker declared his opposition. John Boehner has said that he is opposed to it. A vote of 61-31, more than the needed 60, the Democratic-led Senate agreed to begin consideration of the bipartisan bill, which, with passage likely by the end of the week, 7 of the 45 Senate Republicans joined 52 Democrats and 2 independents in voting to move passage. All the no votes were cast by Republicans. So I think
panelist Libby Post nailed this yesterday.
Yeah, she had pretty much said 61-62, and that's exactly what.
And then a hard time going anywhere in the House, which appears to be what's going to happen.
Exactly,
Boehner's
yeah.
not going to let it out.
Well, I think this hill actually speaks more to what's really going on in the country, and this how this goes really tells you that we continue to have a very divided Congress, and there's a even though there were enough Republicans to at least be moderate on this and not stand in the way of it passing the Senate, it's going to be
right.
like the budget bill, or
right.
it's going to be like the debt ceiling. It's not going to get enough support to even come up for vote in the House, it looks like.
Yeah.
So if we had the same people who write the language for the casino ballot measure write this legislation that say, are you in support of discrimination in the workplace?
Do you want to make sure your children would not be taught by a man in a dress?
I mean, would it be different?
Ridiculous. Yeah.
Well, this does not authorize gay marriage across the board in the U.S. All it does is make it against the law to discriminate against people because of their, their gender.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
If
you put it in that term of, are you against discrimination?
Yeah. It shows how tides are shifting. That's the fact that it made it through with even some Republican support is interesting.
We are going to take a break. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from the Turning Stone Resort, offering accommodations, dining, and a variety of recreation and live entertainment located on the Thruway at Exit 33, turningstone.com. Topperson, natural medicine formula creams designed to heal muscles, joints, nerves, and skin conditions, including shingles and eczema. Topperson.com. In New England Auctions, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, for 40 years, an international auction gallery offering fine art, books, maps, and antiques. 413-665-3253 for gallery and auction information.
Okay, a couple quick letters that we have, and I want to get to these before we continue our conversation. By the way, welcome back to our roundtable. Excited to get into the content of the show. I forgot to welcome you all back. Yes. Ted writes, regarding the discussion about the casino gambling prop, the New York Times recommended a no vote in today's edition. Number one. Number two, I received robocalls from both our current and past governor.
Ooh, who was the other one?
Pataki.
Rockefeller?
No, Pataki is calling too.
Governor Rockefeller.
Malcolm Wilson called.
Greg writes, I think Ray's comments spot on with a terrific supporting statement made by Rosemary. I just love breaking news. Richard makes this point. I think the eagerness for high-speed chases have resulted in my local police in Del Mar go speeding through town unnecessarily. I routinely see four police cars tearing through town on a way to a big box store for a shoplifter, putting citizens at risk. I think the culture fosters this adrenaline-seeking behavior.
Yeah, it's a big problem.
And
nationwide.
Finally, Paul says, because I had said that when I went to vote, they told me that to turn over that there was content on both sides. And Paul writes and said, I just voted in Port Henry. I did turn the ballot over and voted for the amendments. On leaving, I asked the poll workers why they hadn't reminded me to turn the ballot over to vote on the amendments. And I was told they were not allowed to. What a dumb rule designed to keep people from casting complete votes. Please remind people to turn the ballot over and vote the amendments.
I wonder,
I'll have to get the news team working on that, finding out actually what if there is a rule on that.
Yeah,
again,
I'm gonna ask now when I
know
vote.
You know, they when you walk in there is a sample ballot and there is an informational and you can ask about the ballot and I you know, they said, look, there's stuff on both sides. I don't know how that could be not legal, but or that they weren't allowed to
tell you that? Well, the Board of Elections perhaps should issue a bulletin to all the polling places to suggest that this is okay.
And and maybe there's a difference between saying there are ballot positions as opposed to saying that there is content on both sides.
I think both of those are neutral, but you probably don't want to say, you're sure going to want to weigh in on the on the gambling thing now. Well, that's on the back.
I got that. But, and maybe that's what they're worried about. I don't know, but I find
that was
it,
good.
Yeah, that was a great accent.
You can work at the.
The posse's coming. The posse's coming. I like it. You can do a little Western here.
Oh, don't we every day? Okay, what do you want to talk about? You want to talk about the NFL?
Yes.
Okay, so here's a story. You know, we talk a lot about. We talk a lot about bullying. We certainly have talked a lot about the bullying issues throughout the country and great concern over those issues, rightfully so. And now we look at the story that comes out of, ultimately Miami.
Yep.
The city of Miami and the Miami Dolphins football team. And there is a question about the NFL culture of bullying. And... So
some of it's expensive.
Yeah,
they have to pick up the tabs. Did you see
that? Yeah, and you know, to be honest with you, that is part of the culture. Every pro that you ever hear talk about it says rookies, especially first round picks who have fat contracts, are often asked to pick up tabs. That's part of the culture for good or bad. Carrying shoulder pads for the veterans. That's part of the rookie hazing, if you will. That goes on forever. allegedly self-policed. Coaches generally stay out of it. This went way beyond that.
Well, so let me just happen? Okay. Yeah. So Jonathan Martin and Richie Incognito.
I know Incognito the Thug. I just think it sounds like a comic book character.
It's so great,
and he's all tatted up. Yeah, he looks the part too.
Spent most of the season side by side, a pair of 300-pound men made rich from football, crouch inches apart on the offensive line of the Miami Dolphins. When the defense took the field, they sat on the bench in order of their position, Martin the left tackle next to Incognito the left guard. They were as connected as teammates could be, though they could hardly be more different. Now, Martin and Incognito are gone from the team, at least temporarily, opposites embroiled in a twisted controversy over hazing and workplace abuse. Martin, a classics major who attended Stanford and is the son of two Harvard graduates, left the Dolphins last week after an episode in the cafeteria in which teammates stood as Martin sat, the last in a string of perceived slights. Incognito, a 30-year-old veteran with a reputation for dirty play and a history of rough behavior, was suspended indefinitely by the Dolphins late Sunday while the team and the league investigated the matter. Their unfolding saga is now forcing the NFL to turn its gaze toward a locker room culture and start defining the gray areas between good-natured pranks and hurtful bullying.
Yeah, this piece, it's a New York Times piece you're reading, is actually quite neutral and really bland. I recommend Sally Jenkins in the Washington Post.
Yeah,
and,
really?
Yeah, and again, I mean, some of this is like, it's like hazing and fraternities that's gone way, way overboard. This was racial, it was cruel, it was dangerous, and yes, they had to pick up tabs. We talked about that, but we're not talking like an $80, $150.
No, right. $54,000 tab.
Yeah. So and Martin
like
now
that waitress.
Martin is really he's an amazing player. I mean, he is he wants to be a lawyer. He very well educated, extremely mild mannered. He absorbed this apparently for as long as he could and then walked off. The team never did anything until it became apparent. I'd love to know how it did that. Wow, we got a really big problem. This is almost criminal behavior.
Well, from what I have heard, that the Miami, and I believe, first of all, that Richie Incognito, who from college days on has been a bad apple. I mean, you've had cases where, you know, future Hall of Famers Richard Seymour took his helmet off and swung it at the guy during a game.
Right.
That's not a thing that players do, because players generally have respect for each other, even if they are fighting against each other. Incognito's a bad guy. In many ways, I think. And what happened here is there were guys who went along with him. And so what I think you're going to see is more heads are going to roll here. I think, number one, Incognito may never play again in the NFL. Number two, there are going to be some coaches who are going to be called under the carpet, on the carpet. There are going to be some players who may also be suspended. This went way beyond what you hear from other locker rooms.
But evidently it's part of the culture.
But not that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
not that.
And I was taken by, as you say, coaches, and I was taken by the comments that are quoted from Joe Philbin, who is the second year head coach at Miami, right?
Who watches Miami?
Said that his statement is, "I want you to know, as the head coach of the Miami Dolphins, I'm in charge of the workplace atmosphere." He said on Monday, declining to provide specifics about what led him to suspend Incognito. If the review shows that this is not a safe atmosphere, I will take whatever measures necessary to make sure that it is. I find it difficult to believe, given the short reign that the coaches have and these players, that they don't know about that culture.
This reminds me of what happened a few years ago when Senator Packwood was caught for sexual harassment in the Senate.
He was
touching up his woman employees. And the words then were exactly the same. It was acceptable. It was part of the culture. Mm. And then suddenly it changed, and Packwood was caught up in that.
But what?
And this may be what's happening now. All this kind of stuff was allowable, and now we're going to see an adjustment.
A new standard.
Right.
But I don't think that what Richie Incognito did was for a large... In other words, rookies are a part of the team, and there is a hazing process, but in the long run, the veterans generally are there to teach these guys and bring them along and help them get along, especially the top rookies. So Yeah, it's like fraternity hazing to some extent. They want them in the group.
How's it different? It seems like it's exactly the same to me.
What Incognito did?
The hazing in the football culture and the hazing that goes on in college or went on in college campuses. There's been quite a crackdown on it.
I think that it's very similar.
Okay.
But in the long run, they want these rookies to be part of the team. And so, in other words, a lot of times they'll have these guys pick up a tab for dinner. But
they were talking about one thing where they had like they gave bad.
They gave him a $15,000
all bad
check
haircuts,
and it was really $1,500. But they will. There is that aspect. But what this guy did, first of all, can I just say, Richie Incognito, if you're a racist and a bully and possibly criminal in threatening, here's a plan: don't leave a voicemail and don't do a text. What is
or any of the agents you sound off for have a problem with me, you know where to find me, # bring it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, he's done.
Well, he's probably toast. Yeah.
It's just like Packwood, who kept a diary. He didn't see his behavior as unacceptable, and indeed, such behavior or similar behavior has not been unacceptable until now. I don't know. You just have to have girls on the team, and this kind of stuff stops.
Yeah.
Boys just don't know how to behave when you put them together.
Fair enough.
So ultimately, Martin just says, I've had enough of this. And Incognito called him the easiest teammate to scare. So Martin then just leaves.
Yeah.
And so it'll be interesting to see what is done to bring him back and to change the culture, if you will, of that particular locker room and what kind of reverberations it'll have in the NFL overall.
The teammates should be soul-searching, saying, why didn't I step up? It's like a bullying case in school. Mm-hmm. It's like, why didn't I step up
help? Immature and sophomoric. It's stunning to me.
Well,
to
this is football. These are big, huge, 300-pound boys. I mean, playing a kid's game.
They're in their 20s and 30s.
Yes, but you're playing a kid's game. You've extended your
it
boyhood.
It is a game.
You've extended your boyhood, and you make millions.
Millions. That's
what a life.
As I repeat, boys will be boys.
Right, you are.
Well, it'll be really interesting to see what happens and how this is handled all the way around. So, and again, it's one of those stories that you just think, well, I wonder why we haven't heard about that before.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you had the case of Prince Amukamara, the Giants at the time. He was last year was a second year defensive back for the Giants, but he was injured in his first year. So essentially, he was like a rookie.
Kind of in his first
and
year.
He's kind of a. Not a meek guy, but he's an unassuming fellow and a really smart guy. And so they were hazing him a bit. Good-natured to some extent, according to his own
accounting. Of this.
Somebody didn't like the way he responded to the hazing and dropped him in an ice-cold tub. Now, a punter on the Giants had videoed it and put it on YouTube. And then all hell broke loose. In the long run, Amukamara said yesterday, this was nothing like that. This happens in hazing. So there is a culture. The guys know it's the culture. Incognito went over the line. Way over the line.
Yeah.
We are out of time. I want to thank everyone who wrote to us, and you can still do that by going to roundtable@wamc.org. We also welcome your comments on Facebook or Twitter. Rosemary, Mike, Ray, thank you very much, and we'll be back tomorrow and talk about elections and see what has happened. And
I just had one thought about this: if Richie does end up coming back, you probably won't know it because he'll be incognito.
Hey, drive safely. Mike will be here all week.